I want Amber to keep all of this in. Hey, everybody! We are back. It's Friday, but it's actually Monday, because it's Friday when we recorded. It's Monday, and this is the next episode of...
Traphead Undar Plastic.
Is that like a Tolkien language you're speaking there? I didn't understand a word of it.
Yes. The classic joke, I put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. There it is. Welcome, the goody pee-pee.
Yeah, he said it. I didn't say it. He said it.
Welcome to Traphead Undar Plastic, the podcast. I think my brain was slower than my mouth when I was saying that last time. Anyways, welcome to the podcast for the miniature hobby enthusiast. We're happy to have you here. How are you doing today, John?
I'm John, a.k.a. the hip-hop-opotamus. My rhythms are bottomless.
Oh, nice.
And joining me, as always, is the rhinoceros.
Yes.
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be here. Are you glad to be here?
I'm happy it's Friday.
Yeah?
You know... Working at like corporate America Friday is different than working in your own business Friday. Because like Friday at Cray meant no work on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to paint this little lady for a sponsored video that needs to come out before the end of March. So that I'm going to be putting in some brush strokes this weekend.
Right, so when they're listening to this, it is already April. So
It better be done by then.
Better be done. Yeah, it is April next week already.
Yeah, that's Wednesday, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no pressure. Mm. Yeah, it's different. It's different. I don't really think of them as weekends either. It's more of how much time will I be able to get in to work on painting or editing or whatever in a weekend. It's not that, I'm not doing any of that this weekend. It's how much am I going to need to do this weekend?
It's especially true for you because you work during the week mostly.
Yeah. Yes, I'm working during the day and then working during the night. I had my annual review with my boss yesterday, and at the end of the meeting, and she's like, well, is there anything else you have? And I'm like, well, I just want to let you know, because she knows that I have a YouTube channel. And I'm like, and it's going great, and I'm loving it, and I'm having a lot of fun, and I say the bullshit where you're like, I'm learning things that I'm applying to my role. Which is kind of true, because some of the stuff that I've actually learned through the YouTube channel, I'm applying to what I do at work. So, you know, you got to that. And I said, and I don't know what the future is going to look like. I said, I just want to be upfront with you. It doesn't impede my day job with our team. But I know I said I could see a future where it becomes my full-time job.
Oh, wow.
And she's very supportive, and she's like, that's awesome. She's like, it's so great that, you know, seen this success and blah, blah, blah. And she supports it and everything. And I just wanted to be transparent there. So we'll see. We'll see. I was like, and then right after I opened my mouth and I said, I have one more thing to say. And it was about the YouTube. And my brain goes, shut up. Don't say anything.
What were you going to say?
I just wanted it to be where if the day comes where I have that conversation with her that I quit.
Right, yeah.
That it's not like, what?
Yeah, you were a lot better about it than I was. I was just like, 2 weeks notice, bitch, I'm out of here. And they were like, what?
Peace.
But yeah, okay. So we got the preamble ramble.
Number we got
one,
some stuff.
Number one topic is John's nightmare.
Yeah, I had a nightmare. And the next morning, I got up and immediately pulled out this document and wrote down John's nightmare. It was so vivid. Okay, so I'll paint the scene for you of this nightmare.
Okay. How fitting. Paint the scene, yes.
Paint it.
Is it a miniature scene?
It's not, but we could certainly make it into a diorama. Okay. It involved you, me, Sam Lentz, and Vincey V.
Dang.
Okay. The scene opens to us standing in the middle of an old decrepit house.
Okay. Good start.
And the whole scene is desaturated. Like, there's no vibrant colors anywhere. It's all basically in tones of grays and sepias and whites and blacks.
Okay.
We're in like this, you open the front door to this house and there's immediately like the living room and it's just a ruin, a mess. And even like the floorboards are decayed and rotten and everything. And there's trash everywhere. And the only piece of furniture in this living room is an old box TV. The tube TV is back when they were actually also like a piece of furniture where they were in like a wooden case.
It got some of that wood weaving on it somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And we're just standing there and we're talking, but I can't hear or understand what you guys are saying.
Okay.
And the TV turns on and the TV starts, it gets staticky and it's all in black and white. And it starts flickering through these scenes like you see like in horror movies when a TV shows like there's randomly a bug crawling and then it clicks to a child like riding a tricycle and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and then like a needle super close to someone's eye and then it's like,
yeah. It's all these just like quick shots of moderately uneasy things.
Yeah.
And as it's flickering through them and like the light is like now the only light suddenly in this whole place because everything else is now dim except for that freaking thing. And as it's flicking through, occasionally when it shows a human, their eyes start to glow green a little bit. They start getting more and more vibrant green as it's flickering through.
Are we still chatting at this point?
No, we're just staring at it.
Okay.
No one's saying anything. And the thing is just static. There's no sound coming out of the TV other than the... And the green is getting brighter. And then as it's flicking through, now all of the people that have the green glowing eyes are staring out the TV at us. Mm. Like right at us. At this point, I freak the fuck out. And I go to run out of the house, but first I do the thing that you always do in a horror movie, is they have this little weird curtain that's on the front door that covers where there's a window that looks out there. And I peek that back and look at it, because our car is parked right outside.
Okay.
I think it was Vince's little Honda car.
Oh, yeah.
Two-door
car. His little zipper.
Which is the great getaway car in the situation. And as I look out... There is a man slowly walking down the sidewalk.
Is he walking or is he just like floating?
It was so smooth, so I didn't look at his feet, but he was just slowly walking. He was an old man. And I turn back to you guys and say, guys, we got to go. And I turn around, and as I turn around, he stops. He looks at me, and his eyes are glowing green.
Game over.
At that exact moment... My wife wakes me up because I am apparently making this sound. In my sleep.
Whoa.
So she wakes me up in the moment when you usually wake up because the scariest thing is about to happen.
Yeah. You're like, nope, I'm getting out of this.
Yep. And so at this point, it's 3 a.m. and I'm wide awake. I'm like, oh my God. And that's my nightmare.
Did you go back to sleep?
Eventually, I fell back asleep, but not for a while because I was just like looking all around the room for green glows.
Okay. I'm surprised how vividly you remember that dream.
It must have been because she woke me up right when it was like right after. Because I think in the moment you remember it, but unless you wake up right after, it seems so much harder to remember the details. But I remember it clear as day. Like I remember what you guys were wearing. I mean, Vince always wears the same thing. So that was easy. But
sounds pretty terrifying.
It was terrifying. It was awesome. And it was also like, gosh, I want to use some green glow now. I'm in a spooky scene.
You a big dreamer?
Not usually, no.
Okay. My wife dreams every single night, I feel like, and she remembers them. And she always tells me her dream and we're on our dog walk. And they're always like very real situations.
Oh.
And like they're always like related to something that happened in the last 2 days. It's like strange. But I dreamt when I was a kid, and I had nightmares when I was a kid, but I don't have any anymore.
Wow.
I don't know what that means about me and my brain.
Yeah, it just doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It just turns the switch off.
It's broken.
Okay, so Amber's really close to the next phase of this level of enlightenment, where she's going to start having dreams of things that happened before they happen.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens.
Yes.
I've had that where it's like... I've been exactly here before. I've done exactly this thing. And you have this really eerie moment and you realize I dreamt this.
Yes.
And so she needs to write this stuff down.
She needs to get in a pool of amniotic fluid. Yes. We need to hook some cables up to her head and then we can predict future crimes.
Yes. So we have little marbles will come down.
Yes.
And tell us.
Yes.
Unless our names come on the marbles.
And then
we have to kill her.
Then we have to gouge her eyes out and get new eyes.
Oh, we have to like take her out of the bathtub then, right? To save her?
Yes.
And then we destroy all the evidence.
Yeah.
Take the marbles.
Because this is not okay. This is immoral to put like people in prison for crimes they didn't commit.
Right.
Yeah.
It's pre-crimes.
Pre-crimes. Minority Report, for those who didn't get the reference. Great movie. You should watch it.
We should go. We should play out the rest of the movie.
Just keep going. Yeah. Yeah. Drugs, violence. No. All right. It is March 23rd. 26th. Your note here says we should be at Adepticon right now, but I feel like, isn't it normally a little bit earlier? I guess it's kind of like the last weekend in March, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's typically last weekend. I mean, I guess technically it could have been last weekend, but I felt like typically right around Sarah's birthday is right when we're going or about to go.
Yeah.
Whatever, so.
Either way.
This would be the Friday, the day.
The day after you arrive. The first full day.
Yeah, first full day. Best day.
Yeah.
Best day of the con, not completely hungover at this point.
Yeah.
Just kind of.
not totally physically exhausted.
Yes. Seeing all of our friends and meeting new friends and looking at bits in the Bits Dudes place. And buying stuff on the first day because you don't want to wait until Sunday because it'll all be sold. The good stuff will all be gone.
Yep.
Yeah, note to self, don't wait to buy this Dino Res primer till Sunday because all the black will be gone and you'll be stuck with like baby poop. It's the only color left.
Is that what you got?
I got like a camo green one year because there was nothing left and I never opened it.
I was like, I need to buy something.
I need some primer. So apparently that was a color.
So olive green. That works.
Past John wasn't bright in his
You think current John is bright right now?
No. Not at all.
All right. Well, that's sad. I'm glad you put that in there. Thank you for that. Well, okay. Related to that, though.
Related!
March 22nd, 2022 is the date for Adepticon next year, and it is in Schaumburg, Illinois. There was some speculation on your end that it'd be in Texas because of something you read on the internet.
I thought Vince was the one that told us that.
Oh, okay.
Wasn't me.
Okay, wasn't me.
So never trust what Vince Venturella tells you. It's what I've learned. But yeah, because there were some logistical things and all that was rumors that it might not be in Illinois anymore. But they put out their banner, updated the banner on their Facebook group, and it had the dates and it had the location. So they're stuck now. They can't change.
Yeah.
They're not allowed.
Pending a second pandemic.
Right, or a second 102nd wave of the current that's now he has something to look forward to. Shunk.
Yeah,
suck in.
I don't know what's wrong with me, but I'm like strangely calm about the fact that they're like, I haven't gone to a con for like 2 years now.
I was just thinking that same thing this week. It was such a heavy blow the first time last year at this time because it was basically there. We were like about to leave, it felt like.
Yeah.
And then it got canceled in the 11th hour. And here it's just like, I've not got my hopes up. They have already, you know, they canceled this one. We knew writing on the wall wasn't going to happen 2021 fairly early. I lied to myself for a while saying it would happen. And then I realized it wasn't. And then they also just canceled Nova recently. And so I just kind of hadn't gotten my hype level over 9,000. And I haven't been painting like competition stuff for it. That's a big thing too, right? Like you were working on a competition piece for last year's Adepticon. Hadn't finished it.
I'm still going to finish that for Golden Demon.
Yes, I think you should. You put so many hours into that damn creamy white.
I still have so many hours to go because I have to put... I want it to be like a diorama of Drazar killing other incubi. So I'm going to have to paint other incubi.
Oh, baby.
Maybe two.
You don't want it so many. It's like the base gets so big and it makes him look inconsequential.
Yeah.
I painted that damn dragon. And so I was like, the level of deflation after that was pretty high. But now at this point, it feels like we're removed enough from the memories of how awesome it is that it's not the same.
Yeah. I think it's good because it just gives variety to our hobby life.
Right. Like, we don't need to put an event on our calendar for us to enjoy the hobby. That's kind of the thing that I've gotten to.
Oh, we're saying different things right now, I think.
Are we?
Yeah. Because I was saying the con is good because it just gives variety
true.
To like what you do. It makes you paint different things if you're going to compete. And then obviously going there is different than just sitting in your hobby area. You get to see other nerds. People always say that miniature painting is such an isolationist hobby. So that's good to see other people.
Yeah, very much. I'm very excited because I feel like over the last year, and maybe it's just my, interpretation or the lens that I'm looking through, I feel like the hobby community has come together a lot in the last year, and people are more connected virtually through the hobby than ever before because of the situation that we're all in, and those connections are kind of required because it's the only way you can.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's going to be even more awesome when, you know, you do get to be there in person and finally see the people that you've been chatting with and hanging out with on streams or watching their videos or in Discords with and all that kind of stuff.
That is true. We got to get like some other people. Like, we got to get Goobs. Maybe ML. I feel like they never go to Adepticon.
Maybe Guy.
Oh, yeah.
Guy and Penny.
Oh, yeah. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
That'd be Penny's debut to the world.
Oh, no. She doesn't have a face. It's all blurred out in person.
She just walks around with a mask on constantly.
Well, yeah, she could do that now. No one would know. It's Penny. Yeah, we need to get those hosers over here. Show them a good time.
Yeah, that'd be good. What's the deal with this wonderful email regarding oils from a studio artist, parenthesis, Rebecca?
Rebecca is her name. She sent me a long, long email. She didn't send it to you. And she is classically trained, formally trained as an artist, a studio artist, I think was the term she used. I'm sorry, Rebecca, if I'm screwing this up. And she gave me a bunch of interesting information and a bunch of kind of breakdowns of the whys of certain things around oils and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I will share that she shared with me was that even odorless artist mineral spirits are not just good for your health or indifferent to your health. They are also bad for your health.
Just less bad.
Yep. And as little of it as we use in miniature painting and as little of it time we're kind of just exposed to the fumes, whether or not you smell them, they're still there. It's pretty minor, but just be aware, like, don't leave a big cup of mineral spirits out while you're painting all day, every day, and be hovering over it and stuff.
Yeah.
Because there are some traditional artists that have had to stop, even recently have had to stop painting in oils because of developing like migraines and issues from smelling that stuff. So she didn't say don't use it. She says perfectly fine, and she's gotten into the miniature hobby with her partner as well.
Nice.
Recently because of this, and so she wanted to share some stuff. So I thought that was awesome, and thank you, Rebecca, for sending such a nice, lovely note, and that you listen to the podcast and are smarter about oil paints than me.
All right, last item in the preamble ramble.
You just put some words down.
Yeah, I did.
I don't know what any of them mean.
Okay, so I was sitting here painting last night. Amber was watching a show on the couch next to me called This Is Us. The very popular show.
Yeah, I watch that show too.
She's watching season 5, episode 11. There's a character named Uncle Nicky, and he was getting into miniature painting. And he was painting a model kit of the lunar module. Is that what it's called? The first thing that landed on
mm-hmm.
the moon?
Mm-hmm.
And they showed a few B-roll shots of him painting, and I noticed a product that I know. He had the Army Painter wet palette.
What?
And he was using it. And I believe they're brushes because they were white handle brushes.
Yeah.
That's pretty unique to Iron Painter. And also, I guess,
like triangle shape.
I don't think I saw enough of the brush to see because he was kind of choking up on the brush quite a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely that wet palette. I showed Amber and she was like 100%. I was like, oh, it's kind of cool to see that. I wonder if they had like a deal with Iron Painter. They kind of just tossed it in there randomly.
Yeah. They went to the local hobby shop and whatever they thought they needed or someone told them that they need to make it look realistic.
Right. Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. Yeah. They got a wet palette and that's what it was. But that was cool to see that. If you're a fan of that show, it's season 5, episode 11. Check it out. It's a little cool thing.
Does he die at the end of the episode?
Yes, he does.
Oh, damn it. Spoilers!
I actually have no idea. I didn't watch the episode.
If you were painting, you didn't have time to watch a sappy drama.
Yeah! All you losers that watch sappy dramas out there, I definitely don't do that. All right, what'd you paint, John?
I got a big booger.
Oh. I have a new found hatred of boogers.
Why?
Because I got my septum pierced. I've always wanted to have it done. And man, little boogies get caught in that little earring area, ring area. And it is very difficult to get out because it's very tender. Whenever I touch it, I cry and I hate it.
You can't like roll over when you're laying in bed at night, like onto your face, right? Because that would just hurt and wake you up.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not the kind of person that this is my face. I'm okay with that. But yeah, I can't like... I feel like there's a bunch of like dried boogers on it, and when I try to rotate it, which I know I shouldn't, but I'm always trying to, it's like shrapnel going through the wound, and it's so fucking painful.
That boogie shrapnel is the worst.
Yeah, boogie shrapnel. All right. Anyways,
I painted one of the Atriarchs of Ruin, is what they're called, by Creature Caster.
Is Atriarch supposed to be like an asexual term, like not matriarch, not patriarch?
I think it has to deal with the hierarchy in their range according to size of the models.
Okay.
So the matriarchs and patriarchs are big models, and these guys are smaller.
Okay.
And so they just released or just came out for pre-order. So that's kind of cool. I kind of got to paint one right when they're new. And so I painted these. I call them the twins. They have an actual name, but it's like two brothers that are joined at the hip, literally. and one's like a little bit more small and decrepit, and the other one's bigger and beefy, carrying a big old sword.
Wait, hold on here. How many legs do they have?
Just two.
Okay, so it's like a centaur, where instead of a horse, it's a human, and instead of a man top, it's two men.
So it's not a centaur at all.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Scott, it's exactly that.
It's exactly a centaur.
The little catch or hitch in this is that I painted them with craft paints. I painted this whole model with craft paints. I found a new set of craft paints, and I was at Menards just looking for, I don't even remember what I was looking for, something for the house. And in an end cap, they had this box set of Testers brand craft paints. It said usable on all materials, wood and metal and plastic or whatever. I'm like, ooh, doesn't say resin. These are resin, but it stuck. And it's matte and very matte. It was really interesting that when we talk about something new we've tried or something we've learned recently in painting in the after party, I'm going to talk about these craft paints and my learning experience with this being so much different based on kind of where I'm at in my hobby journey.
Okay.
Whereas if I would have just tried these when I first started painting, I probably would have said, well, these are terrible. I don't see why anyone would use these. But
interesting.
That's not the case.
Okay.
That's not the case.
So how matte are these on a scale of like Citadel to scale 75 to Chimera to like AK Interactive Ultra Matte? Like where are we lying?
Ultra matte!
Where are we lying on the spectrum of mattness?
They are as matte. They are hazmat as matte. they're as matte as scale 75.
Okay.
They are like uber matte.
Yeah.
Now, what
uber matte
that you're going to talk about later, the thinness in the application of a paint does affect the level of matteness or satinness to it. So, but yes, they are very matte.
Yeah. So that was a great segue. I painted a character named Fade. It's a model that I paid someone to sculpt from a video game that is very near and dear to my heart called Heroes of New Earth. It's a dead game. No one cares about it.
just like Guild Ball.
Yeah, just like Guild Ball. I got a penchant for dead games, apparently. Mm-hmm. Crysis, Crysis 2, Crysis 3. Don't put those games.
That's common for like shooters and crap, though. Like they have a shelf life other than like Half-Life, right? Or Team Fortress, or what the fuck am I thinking of?
Half-Life's popular. Yeah, it's a popular franchise. Team Fortress is popular. I mean, like I feel like Modern Warfare, Call of Duty, those are pretty popular all the time.
Yeah, but they keep coming out with new ones, and the old ones die off.
Right, but like the main releases were never as popular as the main release of like when Crysis was at its peak, I suppose. Sure. But anyways, this is a special model to me because there is none other in the world other than this one right on this desk, which is hilarious because I keep breaking it. Yeah, it's a 3D printed model. The print was actually super nice because it came in parts with little pegs and little receiving holes to assemble it, whereas normally it'd be just one giant thing, you know, 3D printed with a bunch of supports all over it. But I can't find any support, like little defects or anything. So it's a nice print. It was easy to put together.
So the person that you had sculpted, did they also print it for you, or do you have to go through somebody else for that?
I went through Level 52 Studios.
Oh.
Daniel Fernandez sculpted it, who is a sculptor employed by them.
Okay.
And then they engineered it, made the cut lines, and printed it for me. Level 52 did. Or Black Anvil, Broken Anvil Miniatures.
Broken Anvil.
Cool. I always confuse Broken Anvil Miniatures with Black Sun Miniatures, the British brand that have all the barbarians and like orcs and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, I painted this model. The main body is done. I got to paint the scythe now and her smoky cape.
That's so smoky.
I know. The basically the model itself, this is based on the ultimate avatar.
Ultimate. Did she go ultimate form and this is what it looks like?
Yeah.
It's but not the level one version?
No. Like the ultimate skin for Fade, as she levels up, she changes what she looks like and her whole bottom half is just smoke. And so this is our attempt to, you know, kind of be inspired by that, having some smoke on the cape itself.
I like that.
Yes. I think it would look silly if it was just like all smoke on the bottom.
it's just little bits of like cotton puffs that you just glued to it.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm having fun painting this. Well, I'm having fun and I'm not having fun.
sounds like the par for the course for you though, right?
Yeah. It's a lot of tedium. I'm doing NMM and one thing that I noticed was that this is an annoyance I have a lot with miniature painting is that sometimes models are symmetrical. And so when you paint something and you figure it out, you got to paint it again, right?
Yeah.
And then in this case, it's not only symmetrical, it is quadmetrical. I tried to look up a word for this. I couldn't find one.
Oh.
But it's a 3D object, right?
Yes.
So if I had to paint this skull on her pauldron, I also have to paint it here and here. And here,
yeah,
you know, because it's a round object. Same goes for like the rings around her thigh. Same go for like the little stripes on these little hip plate things.
Yeah,
I got to paint things 4 fucking times.
Yes, you do.
It's super annoying.
By the fourth one, you got pretty good at it, though, I imagine.
Yeah, but like I already figured it out.
I don't want to do it again. Yeah, when there's no action to the pose and she's literally just standing there.
Yes,
basically. Yeah, like you said, perfectly symmetrical on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah, the legs are kind of differently posed, but for the most part, it is bang on the same all around the model.
Yes.
So that was annoying. I also discovered I had Chimera paints on my palette overnight. Pretty normal. And I kind of the way I paint is I roughly sketch something out, and then I do a lot of wet blending and glazing, but I work with pretty thin paint when I do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like the further along I get into painting an object, the thinner and more precise my applications of paint become. And I was noticing on the gauntlets and also like the hip plates that when I would apply like a thin glaze of black or purple mixed with the magenta and it dried, it looked like this chalky piece of garbage. But like on
hazy?
Top of the, yeah, I mean, yeah, it was like there was a filter through the color.
Yeah.
But on top of the gauntlet, on top of the hip plate, it was totally fine. It was nice and clear. In other areas, it was fine. And I was getting this weird inconsistency in finish based on how diluted my Chimera paint was. If I took some more out and put it on the palette, then it was fine and it worked fine. But I kind of got to where I liked it. And then I hit it with a mixture of gloss and ultra matte varnish. And that made that haze disappear entirely. And it made it like super rich in color and kind of finished it off nicely. But that was kind of a weird thing to deal with Chimera paint.
Yeah, I found that as well with very matte paints. And same with those craft paints that I was working with. When you break them down so much for a glaze or a filter, you've diluted the medium that's in them that they put in to make them matte so much that it loses kind of its potency.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of starts to revert back to the medium, you know, or the middle, which is more satin than everything else. And it was more accentuated when compared to other parts of the model that are already painted.
Yes.
That are more matte.
Definitely.
So just kind of be aware of that. But it is a way you can fix that with just putting some varnish over the top to bring it back down. But
yeah,
it makes perfect sense, right? You're just taking away so much of that medium in order to thin it down, or like even sitting in your palette overnight, all the water that's getting absorbed into that is then making the ratio of that medium less and less and less over time.
Yeah, but it shouldn't change the finish.
Well, the medium is what's making it have that finish.
I know, but like water doesn't have a finish to it. So like you're adding something that is presumably, in my head, not affecting the finish. Obviously it is in the end.
Yeah, I think it's more of, it's not that, like I said, it's going back to the middle ground. So the middle ground is more shiny than an additive that's trying to make it purposely more matte. So you're just taking that away. Because otherwise you wouldn't have that medium in there that makes it more matte if it already was when void of the matte additive.
Do you think various pigments have different finishes?
Yes.
So like the dust?
Yes. Typically,
I feel like black is shinier.
Yeah. Well, that, yeah, it depends on which kind of black. Because like there's an ivory black and there's a Mars black.
Yeah.
And there's, I think, a couple other ones. But ivory black or lamp black,
yeah,
are,
yeah,
more darker black. And because they're darker, they actually are shinier. But a lot of really bright pigments are naturally more shiny as well.
Okay.
So like your whites and yellows and stuff are typically more shiny.
Interesting.
Yeah, I see. When I'm doing my digging, and I think Rebecca talked about this in her lovely email to me too, about the finishes of things as well. So, and you see that in oils too.
Okay.
Scotty, before we get to today's main topic, today's episode is a little bit special. Why is it special, Scott?
Because it's sponsored and we making money.
Money in our pockets is. That's right. We are sponsored today by Hardcore Miniatures. Great enthusiasts of 32 millimeter high detail resin minis for us to paint.
For gaming and collecting.
Oh, right. Yeah. That too.
At the moment, they have three new awesome, unique orc designs on their website that are currently 21% off. And they also have a sale of up to 47% off running across their entire website for other individual models that they have.
In addition to the awesome new unique orcs that Scott mentioned, they also pride themselves on making miniature versions of some of the characters we love. People like Rambo, Duke Nukem, Doom Guy,
yes,
Serious Sam,
uh-huh,
and maybe more. I can't remember right now. And Half-Life Guy.
The quality on these minis is absolutely impeccable. They sent along the Doom Guy for me to look at, and the quality does not disappoint. It is crispy AF.
Scott, would you like to talk about technology?
I would indeed.
Technology is why we're here today. All of you are listening to this because of technology. And there's a special technology that goes into making these models. Do you know what the Envision Tech Aureus is?
I do not. Tell me, John.
It is a 3D printer of the highest of qualities.
How much does it cost?
Up to $50,000.
Oh my God!
And what do they do with this printer, Scott?
They print the masters on it, and they make them nice and juicy, so the casts are subsequently nice and juicy, and they also pour over the models to get rid of mold supports and print lines of any kind, and I can say firsthand that it's beautiful. But if you don't believe skeezy car salesmen like me and John, you can head over to their Facebook to read reviews from real people, because we're not real. Mm-mm. And see that they're all five stars, saying like, oh my God, this quality is so high that it improved my quality of life.
Wow.
Okay, that's not true, but it was funny.
So thank you, Hardcore Miniatures, for supporting our podcast and allowing us to get tendies for lunch, because otherwise we would just be drinking this Liquitex ink.
Hardcore, parkour! All right, out of the topic for today. I get a lot of questions. Not a lot, but sometimes.
I've gotten a question.
I've gotten one. That's what prompted this entire episode. Okay? When I say something like, or you might say something like, I spent 80 hours painting a model. People are like, what the heck do you spend your time doing? Like, what on earth takes that long to paint a small thing? And this is not just people who are like outside of the hobby, it's people who are inside of the hobby. Mm-hmm. It's just such a thing that on my Discord, I had a challenge. I have a quarterly challenge. And one of the things was spend 50 hours painting a model and keep a log of what you did while painting.
Ooh, boy.
So you had to be intentional about spending time painting. So today we're going to discuss just that. When we are painting a model for a super long time, this fade one is taking me forever. What the heck are we doing? What is taking so long? Many things increase the time length of a model. So let's get right into it.
Let's get right into it, Scott.
I think probably the biggest time sink for me is that while I am painting something, I am discovering information about it. Mm-hmm. So while painting it, you can kind of glean certain things about the model in terms of where shadows and highlights go, in terms of like where certain colors might look good and things like that. And possibly the better painter you are, the less of this you'll have to do. But while I'm painting, I'm not nailing everything perfectly the first time. Mm-hmm. I have to put paint in a certain area and then adjust its position, adjust its size, adjust its shape, adjust its gradation, all of these things. And so it's not like I'm just getting exactly what's in my mind's eye immediately. I have to kind of mess with the paint a lot on the model, discovering the shape. Sometimes you even discover like bumps and volumes that you didn't even see beforehand until you got like really up close and personal with the miniature. Mm-hmm. So like this is what I call it, the discovery phase.
Okay. So yeah. It sounds like you're talking about two separate things here.
Okay.
One you're talking about is the discovery and the kind of creating your own future vision of, as you're discovering things, you are making decisions that you didn't know you were going to have to make.
Yeah.
Being aware that you're going to have to make those is fine, but you didn't know. And as you're kind of exploring, maybe you're getting new ideas or it's changing your process. That's one thing you're saying. Mm-hmm. The other thing you're saying is you touched on the refining part of it too.
Yes.
Which I think are two separate things.
Sure.
Sometimes they touch butts, you know? but.
Whole lot of butt.
There's a whole lot of butts. I think the first thing you talked about... Okay. That's what we're getting to. Okay.
Yeah.
We're gonna flick each other off with caps on our fingers. Okay.
It's like a fez cap.
Yeah.
Okay.
It looks like the... What's that 80s band that wore the cones on their heads?
The Ramones.
No. It's not the Ramones.
I don't know. For all the
Men
audio,
at Work?
For all the audio listeners right now, I'm taking one of those red caps that you see on tops of squeezy bottles, and I'm suctioning it onto my finger, my middle finger, and then I'm showing John it.
Yeah.
In a very inappropriate way. Anyways, yes, that possibly is two different things, refinement and also discovery. But refinement, in this case, I feel it can mean two things.
Mm-hmm.
So... And we can kind of get into what the other definition of refinement is later, which obviously adds to the length. But for me, one thing that I'm still not very good at is I have a thing I want to paint. And I know what color I want it to read as in the end. And it's got a bunch of complicated volumes on it. Okay? So that color I want it to read as is my midtone. That's a definition, right? Mm-hmm. I need to add highlights to this. I need to add shadows to this. And I need to... basically walk a tightrope, and that tightrope is I need to have enough contrast,
yep,
such that it reads from a distance, but also enough contrast, or not enough contrast, I guess you could say, such that you can still see the entirety of the midtone, so it still reads as the color you wanted it to read as. Mm-hmm. So the refinement I'm talking about in this case, as part of the discovery phase, is adding more color, removing color, such that it reads the color I want it to read.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're laying your groundwork in a way that the color, the contrast reads at the basic level. We're not even to the refinement stage yet.
Yes.
But at the basic level, it's reading as the color you want it to read as, while still being interesting by not just being that color everywhere.
Yes. So I had a video that kind of flied under the radar that explored this topic. I painted a shoulder pad on a Space Marine, which is kind of an interesting volume because it starts spherical and then turns into a cylinder at the end. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting shape. And I painted the first shoulder pad and timed it, and it took 10 minutes, whatever, or longer, I don't know. And I wanted to get sufficient blends and whatnot. And I painted the same shoulder pad with the same colors 10 more times.
Why, Scott?
Because the more I painted it, the more I realized how much of each individual color I needed before I started my whole fussy blending process.
Yeah, okay.
If your fussy blending process is also muddled with trying to adjust the size of each individual layer, it takes way longer. Yes. 2 to 3 times longer in my case. Mm-hmm. When I discovered that Space Marine shoulder pad video. So that is one thing. This is a unique, usually you're not painting the same model over and over again if you're painting like a display model, right? It's a new thing. You've never seen it before. So you have to do this discovery phase each and every single time you do one of those bigger pieces.
Mm. Okay.
Okay. That's my first thing. You go.
My first thing is, this is maybe kind of obvious, but you're not phoning it in anywhere.
Yes.
For an example, just last night, as I was finishing up my that creature caster model, on the back of his like flowy loincloth, he's got this rusty chain with hooks on it, which is badass.
Yeah.
And attached to those rusty hooks are decapitated heads.
Nice.
It's the back of the model. It's kind of the back bottom of the model.
Mm-hmm.
I still wanted them to have some interest. So I just slapped on some basic highlight tones with a desaturated skin tone. And then I washed the whole thing with a dark blue.
Yeah.
And so you had some basic highlights, but the tone of a dead skin was there. And then I touched it up just a little bit. So I did those two heads in like 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
If I was going to go full ball sack on this paint job, I would probably spend 5 hours per head. Because you want to, like you said, you want to refine and you want to give the intonation that this is a dead, cold head, and you want to still show all the volumes of the face because they're very crisp faces and have these interesting kind of dead eye expressions on them.
Right.
And so you pull your punches when you want to get something done and still look good. But if you really are going to, you know, put all that time into it, every one of those will be well thought out, really smooth, put textures only where you wanted textures, have every kind of stroke and color have purpose. And then again, you're going to go over those heads instead of, like I said, that was basically two colors. I'd be adding some like maroon down under the cheek lines, and I would be adding some more almost gray colors in all the little crevices and wrinkles on the faces and all that stuff. You just do everything and you take your time on every little piece of the model.
Absolutely. And I want to piggyback off of that one. So it's obviously a spectrum, the level of ball sack, right? Like when I'm painting this model, there are parts that I am phoning in. Like her back, which is going to be covered up by like a scythe. I am not painting that hardcore. Mm-mm. But if you are doing something for a competition, every inch is going to be work time. But, you know, so it's like, okay, you got gaming, you got I'm painting a model for YouTube, you got I'm painting a model for YouTube and I'm trying, and you got competition, right? So there's a spectrum here of ball sack.
Yes.
And so, you know, the more ball sack, the less details you're voting in. But in addition to that, there are a lot of things that expedite painting processes that we use every day in our painting of our Age of Sigmar armies and whatnot that help us paint faster. Things like washes. Mm-hmm. It's not that washes are bad. It's just that the effect they get is too subtle for what I want. And I have to, and basically I'm ending up fixing a lot of what a wash does to my model and not gaining a whole lot. So there aren't any washes on typically models that I'm trying very hard on. I'm applying all of the shadows and all the highlights, I guess you could say, manually.
Yeah,
right?
Purposefully.
Yeah, purposefully. There's no washing. There's none of that expedited process. In line with that, another reason why something might take a long time is because you are opting for techniques that give you a better result, but take significantly longer. So yes. We just mentioned washing. Another one is NMM, right?
Sure.
So the difference in painting a model with TMM versus NMM, at least in my head, basically is a factor of like 10 times the time investment. Like it takes me so long to do NMM versus TMM. And I know you can do TMM in a way similar to NMM, but it doesn't work the same way in my head. So it just takes longer to do non-metallic metals. That is a technique, not using washes, trying to add texture to things which you might not normally care about. So involving things like stippling,
mm-hmm.
or intentional brush strokes to make something look like it has brushed metal. That can be something. But yeah, so you're basically doing techniques that take a lot longer than their speed counterparts.
Yeah, to dissect a little bit more on the washing thing, because I think this is a important one and one that I find myself spending a lot of time on when I'm trying harder. So if I were to go over everything with an Agrax Earthshade, and that was my goal, was to have it shaded in that method, I can achieve that same look except better and far more controlled with just glazes of a dark brown.
Yeah.
And so where it could take me 2 minutes to wash the whole thing in Agrax Earthshade, it would take me probably 2 to 4 hours to go through with a very, very thin, like Rhinox hide right here that I'm holding in my hand, and thin that way down and purposely pull the shadows exactly where I want them. Make sure it's darker for all those dark lines, way darker than the Agrax Earthshade would give me, and only where I wanted it. So that's kind of a prime example of you having more control. Typically, more control equals more time.
Yeah.
So you're on that spectrum of contrast paint is quicker, but less controlled. And 1 million glazes is way, 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 way more controlled, but just takes 100 times as much time.
That's true. Speaking of glazes, and slightly unrelated, I watched a Squidmar video where he talked about things he wished people taught him when he was getting started in the hobby.
I saw this video.
Man's a glaze hater.
Yeah, I saw that.
I didn't know that about you, ML.
I am not mad. I'm just disappointed.
I find myself using glazes quite a bit, but not in such an intentional way as what you just described.
Right.
It's more about hiding blending mistakes that happened earlier in the process.
Yep.
They're good at kind of just like kind of muddying some transitions.
Yeah. Using glazes for shadows is very effective.
It can be, yeah. Especially on like the right like top coat.
Yeah.
Like a cream with like a brown glaze.
Woo, baby.
Chef's kiss. It is freaking amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think where he was going with that, because I'll put words into his mouth to make him sound smarter.
Okay.
Is to getting your bold colors, especially as you're brightening up and going higher in the brightness scale on your piece, to use thicker paint for that. For two reasons. One, glazing lighter colors is a scarier endeavor, and it leads to chalkiness.
Oh, yeah.
And doesn't give you that smooth result. But two, if you're just using 100 layers of glaze to glaze up to a highlight.
God, something came out of you.
It's that demon from the nightmare. My eyes start glowing green, Scott. You gotta...
I'll kill you. Don't worry.
Yeah, you need to put a stake through my heart. If I'm actually a vampire, though, don't do that. Let me be a vampire.
Yeah, can you make me a vampire?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Okay, all right, we're good. All right, back on track. If you're trying to build with thin paint up to highlights, it's not going to be as vibrant once you finally get there, too. So you want to establish a really bold color and then work the transitions. If you start that from the get-go, there's no right or wrong way to paint, obviously. I'm just saying, we're talking about time it takes. Glazing up to a whole new color takes so much time.
Yep.
Compared to just laying it
down. A whole new color. As an alternative to that approach, you could take the Rodrigo Acore approach and just paint the thing the darkest color it's going to end up being, and then add subsequent layers of paint on top, like 4 or 5 layers, and just obviously keep the shadows where you want them and apply the highlights where you want them. And that also takes a decent amount of time.
Yeah, it does. It does. But yeah. It and kind of a caveat to this whole discussion is all of our 100-hour paint jobs look different. And if we were going to put them on a scale of they all look like this at the end, it would take me 100 hours to make it look like Acore, and it would take him 20 hours to make it look that same way.
Why is that?
Because he's better than me.
Okay.
To make it a little bit more specific than that, the dude paints like 8 hours a day in this style.
Yes.
5+ days a week.
That's the thing, I think.
And he's learned over repetition what works, what, you know, what gets the result he wants to finally look like much quicker. It's not that I can't get there. I probably still can't get there to look as good as his, but I can get there. I'm just doing this futzing. I think the biggest part of this whole 100-hour process is the futzing.
That's what I was saying in the beginning. It's that's part of the futzing process. But so I think you touched on something that is really important. When we are doing stuff like this, we might be applying techniques that we're not 100% familiar with.
Yes.
Right? So, which generally speaking isn't the greatest idea if you're trying to get the best result possible, but you got to start somewhere, right?
Right.
If you've never painted a model with full ball sack, the first one's going to be especially hard because you're going to be trying a bunch of things that you're not very familiar with. In this case, John and I was talking about Rodrigo's approach to painting, which he is intimately familiar with, and we are not.
Right.
So yeah, another reason why it could take long is that you're trying out new things you're not comfortable doing.
But the good part about that is by the time you spent 50 plus hours on something and it was new, maybe you ended up spending 5 hours on this one thing, if it was just painting a worn leather belt to really look like true worn leather, and you spent 5 hours on one belt, by the time you're done with that, you've absorbed so much that the next time you do a worn leather belt, it's going to take less time, or it's going to take the same amount of time and look even better. So it's all this sliding scale. And one thing that I go back to about why I take so long to paint something for a competition is I don't have the ability to turn back time and have 5 years of painting like Rodrigo Acore to be able to challenge him in a standoff in a competition. I can't beat him that way. So how can I beat him?
Time.
I can beat him by putting in more work.
Yep.
Hard work wins out, kids.
Yes.
And hard work in miniature painting means I'm spending more time. Look, I see that you have a piece, Rodrigo. I'm just ripping on Rodrigo here in love. Rodrigo has a piece in every single category for this Golden Demon. I have one. My goal is to not get more Golden Demons than Rodrigo. My goal is to beat him on that one.
Yeah.
And so he probably spent 100 hours on those six pieces. I spent 100 hours on one.
Right.
That's my only chance.
Yeah.
And so you only look at the piece as this is my shot, that this is what I'm going to try my very best. And however many hours it takes for me to get there, to not settle in saying that's okay, it's good enough.
Yep.
To just keep doing it over or putting more layers of paint on or, you know, going over the whole thing with a whole new color and starting again.
That's a great little segue. I had Ben Cantor collaborated with me on a video a long time ago about advice for competition painting. Mm-hmm. And one thing he said in that video was be honest with yourself.
Oh, yeah.
When you know something doesn't look good, fix it or restart. So one of the legs on Drazar just was not working. And it was just chalky. It was just chalky and it was nasty looking. And I took out a Q-tip, one of those pointy ones from Tamiya, and I stripped the whole leg down and I restarted because I wanted it to be smooth as I could possibly muster, and I was getting too much texture from too many layers and attempts. So another reason why it might take longer to paint something like this is you cannot be afraid to fully restart a part. And John mentioned it's either painting over it, which I did a couple times, or if you have too much of a texture buildup, stripping it and restarting. And that adds on time for obvious reasons.
Yeah. There is a kind of a misconception out there of the weight of the pressure we put on ourselves for painting any given model, and that I have to get it right. And when you see someone's amazing finished model, you only see that. You don't see the times that they screwed up. You don't see the things they've had to redo. And we kind of naturally come to this conclusion that that final piece was the first attempt at every part of that model. And it kind of leads you down a hallway that says it needs to be able to look that great the first time. And every time I put paint on it, it's getting me one step closer, never one step to the side, obviously not one step behind. It was always getting closer.
Yep.
And that's a misconception. And if you think that way and you only do the things the one time, you're going to get more models painted.
Yep.
But you're also not going to get the best version of it that you could. And it's not that you don't have the ability to get it to the level as the person that redid it three times. It's just that you need to do those repetitions to find it to where you can actually pull it off.
Correct. Yeah. Redoing something gives you knowledge about the process, the dilution of the paints, how much of the paint you should put down, how much of it should be in your brush, like what angle to hold the brush at with respect to the model that you like. There's just so much going on. Okay. You're going to dual wield here, finger condoms and flick me off with both. God damn. another obvious thing that might increase the length of painting, John, is the size of the miniature. when you paint a bigger model, there's more to paint. You're like a ninja master right now. Sick dance moves. Another reason, yeah. So big models take longer to paint. It's more to paint.
Cool story, bro.
I am distracted by it right now by John's grade school shenanigans.
You started it with the tip of the freaking.
Yo, can you do this? Check us out. Yeah. Oh yeah.
What
do,
about the
do the church one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. See all the people. Ah!
Yeah. Two. Okay. Yeah, so yeah, big models for competition, we're oftentimes painting models that are larger and more beautiful looking and have more details on them, or at least a tasteful amount of details. I'm looking at UGW. And that equates to longer painting times because there are more things to paint, more surface area to paint. I got more things. You got more things?
Well, I want to talk about the big models thing.
Talk about the big models.
Let's talk about Mr. the big A.
Dragon Man!
Yeah, a big old dragon. Whoa, Scotty, don't be knocking stuff over!
Okay.
Scott almost knocked over his airbrush cup and airbrush. Yikes.
Yikes on bikes, as John says.
Is right. Other thing I found with big models, and this is probably just me, is that...
It is.
When you have so much space to work on, and you can't compromise in any of that, like the whole height of a dragon and every single scale or all the intricate wing flappies and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You cannot compromise that quality because it's even more kind of emphasized because it's a little bit bigger. I end up taking more time because I would go crazy in one session to sit down for like 8 hours and try to knock out every single bit of that. And so in order for me to kind of like keep my sanity, I will jump over and maybe do his tender underbelly for a while.
Yeah.
And then I'll come back to those scales. And then I'll start working on the pattern that I've done to make it look like a lizard's, you know, weird orange thing or whatever that I did. I don't even remember anymore. And because I'm doing that, I have to have this kind of restart, remember my own education of what I learned the last time I was working on that part of the model.
Yep.
And it's got to be consistent. And because I was doing it for 4 hours a week ago, and then I came back today, I have this kind of warm-up period where I'm working on it again, and it doesn't quite look the same. Eventually it does, but then I've kind of got to rework the whole area so it does all feel the same and it doesn't look like, why is this part of the scale shinier than this when they're right next to each other? And so by having to go back and forth with the big model, if you so choose to do it that way, it just takes more time because you have to like relearn it all again.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Biggest culprit for me for time sinks, fucking blending, bro.
Yeah.
Blending takes so long to get it perfect. Man, it's so annoying. There are tons of techniques that can make it easier, maybe using oil paints. But, you know, I don't know. At the end of the day, to get a flawless blend that is the correct amount of each color you want it to be, to have it read the right color you want it to be, for it to be seamless, to not see any brush strokes, even when you pixel peep it, just takes so goddamn long. And everything on the model needs to be blended, it seems like, in one way or another.
Yep.
Whether it's with texture or with just straight up beautiful transitions. Now, if there are any fuck a smoothness people out there watching this video, you would disagree with me. And that's fine. That's just a matter of opinion. I think everything needs to be blended in some way, in some intentional way, whether that's a harsh blend from A to B because you're painting something that's like high contrast, like NMM, or something that's more subtle, like cloth, and it needs to be more subtle, the blend. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, blending takes so freaking long.
Yeah. And a big kind of factor in that is dealing with and fighting with and always looking for that ideal paint consistency.
Yeah.
Which is an ever-changing like vehicle in motion. Because, okay, I got this I want to glaze, you know, this back of her calves right there. So that bright highlight goes down to that really nice, dark, deeper purple. And I've got the right glaze for that. Well, you're dealing with environmental factors as well. That color that's on your paint, the consistency is going to be changing in real time while you're painting. And the longer you take to apply all those nice gradations, which we are going to be taking a lot of time because you're trying hard, that paint is changing as well.
Yep.
And so you're always going back and forth and double checking. Is like, okay, is this still where I want it to be? Well, enough is evaporated. Now I add a little bit more, a little bit more water. Now it's just too thin. I can't even tell anything. I got to add a little more. Like, there's, again, back to the futzing. I'm spending a lot of futzing time around the exact consistency of paint that I want. And the less experienced I am, the more I'm likely to screw it up by putting on paint too thick or too thin in some cases. Too thin just means I got to keep doing it over and over and over, which equals more time. Or too thick, and now I can see that whole line in it. Now I have to fix that whole thing again. So fighting with your medium is always something to keep in mind. Most of the time, we don't worry about that too much when we're just painting models. Like, oh, layer consistency, oh, glaze, oh, thick paint. And you kind of put things in really unique boxes. When you're trying to do your hardest, you have to take each of those boxes and then turn it into 10 different options, exactly what you want. And you're never quite sure if you're there until you put it on there and you make a mistake and you got to redo it.
Yeah. I feel like this whole episode could have been summarized in one word, and that's futzing.
Futzing.
A lot of futzing going on with the paint.
Yep. Yep, and the more experienced you are, the less you have to futz to get to where you want to get. But that's it. So what do you do that takes 100 or more hours to complete a piece? I would say another big one is there is no aspect of the model that you don't really sit and spend time thinking about and analyzing to make sure that it gets exactly where you want it to get. In my crystal brush piece, my Death Guard guy, one of the critiques I got was that there was a spot under his armpit that looked like it just had a base coat on it, and it was a dark base coat and it was in shadow, whatever, and I didn't paint it enough. It's that those are the tiny little things under an armpit that you can't see unless you take the model and you flip it upside down and you put that armpit exactly into the light and then you look at it from above where the light's hitting at and analyze it exactly from there. And that's what the judges will do.
Yeah.
And so you have to put yourself in this position where you're constantly rotating the model and double checking your work all the time to ensure, okay, not only when I push the light directly on this really awkward, hard to see spot, is there the right emphasis of paint, but I also have to paint it in a way that when you're holding it upright, it looks the correct way based on the rest of the scene.
Yes.
And that is just a pain in the butt, and it takes a lot of time because you're kind of you're forcing yourself to overthink everything. And then that mindset of overthinking applies to everything you've done. You come back the next day and you overthink it again and you look at it again. And then maybe you look online and see what like some master painters would do and something like that. And you're like, well, this looks like garbage. I gotta go again. I gotta do another layer. I've gotta refine more. I need to push the highlight even higher. And that just is more time.
Yes. So while I was painting Drazar, and the thesis of that video, whenever it's going to be done in 2025, is basically talent isn't a thing. The only thing that matters is how much time you're willing to invest. Mm-hmm. Really, your patience.
Yeah.
So when someone is a good painter, I feel like what you can call them is a patient person. Maybe they're not patient right now. Maybe it didn't take them a while to get the result that they wanted to get. But the perseverance they've had to get to the point that they are now required patience. Either it was painting a bunch of models, poorly or not to their standard, or painting a few models and laboring over them intensely to get them where they wanted them to be.
Yeah.
A classic example of this is Vincent Hedon, who won the 2004 Canadian Slayer Sword winner with a piece called Magma Tracks, which I've showed you before.
Yeah.
That rocked the world, because this guy was not a miniature painter. He was an engineer, and he won the Slayer Sword, the most coveted prize at Golden Demon. And he has a blog where he describes it on Bolter and Chainsword, an old forum site. And he just, if he didn't like it, he just redid it. And he painted that model over and over and over and over again until it was as good as he wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's like, really, it's not a level of talent. It's how patient you are toward the paint job.
Yeah, this makes it sound like painting for this many hours on a single figure is no fun.
It isn't.
It isn't fun.
It isn't fun. A lot of times it is. Some is fun. Some is not.
Yeah. There's aspects of it when you finally get that NMM to like, oh my gosh, that looks like metal. You have these small moments, and I would even call them fun. I'd call them moments of satisfaction.
Yeah.
And the satisfaction of finishing that piece, because you have that connectedness to it of spending so much time together.
It's like a baby.
It's your little mini baby, little plastic baby. And so you're so connected to it, and therein inherently is the downside to that as well. When you're so close to it and you're so connected to it, you stop seeing it through new eyes, and so you get to a point where you almost don't see the miniature for what it is. You see it for all the work you've done, and you see it for what you kind of envision it to be. And some version of the combination of what's in front of you and your vision kind of blur together. And that can be hard to separate yourself from as well. And sometimes that's where you'll get down this road and you'll put in 40 hours on a piece and you put it down, or you work on a different part of the model, you work on a different model, and you come back and now it looks different than it did when you were working on it all that time. And suddenly you're not satisfied with the thing you thought you were. Mm. And now back to the patience. Are you willing to go back and improve or redo? Yeah. Or do you say, I'm done?
I also want to say, if your answer to the question is no, that's fine, right? You don't have to be like Vincent Hedon and paint the same model over and over and over again. You can just move on and paint different things and take the lessons you learned from the previous paint job onto the next one. That's what I do.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm pretty middle of the road in terms of patience when it comes to painting. I will say there was a time while I was painting Fade, there's a time on every single part where it is genuinely enjoyable. When I have the perfect consistency paint and the perfect sharp brush, and I am finding all of the right volumes and applying all the right highlights in the sketching phase, it feels effortless. Mm-hmm. And that is when it feels really good. It rarely feels good to me if I'm painting while trying something new and experimenting. That never feels good, because it feels like in the hobby there is no such thing as a silver bullet. Mm. Nothing is as simple as it's made out to be. Whether it's applying an oil wash and getting the result you're after, or using an airbrush, or whatever it is, everything requires some amount of learning. And in the beginning, things just don't look as good as you want it to look.
Yeah.
So for me, it's not fun to learn and to fail. That's just part of the process. But when you're past that and you're taking the lessons you learned and you're painting the model, there are times when it can feel really good. And that was one time. I remember specifically while I was painting the pauldrons, I started with a dark chocolate undercoat and started to apply Mournfang Brown, and then Mournfang Brown and Averlin Sunset put together, and then Averlin, and then Averlin in light yellow or ice yellow, and then just ice yellow. And I was like, it wasn't blended yet, but I was sketching it out, and I was like, I am super feeling this right now.
Yeah.
And that was a really good feeling.
Yeah. The colors are in the right place.
Exactly.
It is reading, yes, how I want it to read.
If I do this, it looks like NMM. Mm-hmm. But if I hold it at an arm's length, that means I got them all in the right spot, and now I can start blending. That is the hardest part done, honestly, for NMM. But yeah, so it's not all agony when it comes to painting really, really hardcore things. There are some moments of respite.
Yeah. And it's right. And I don't think it, I ever really look at it as agony. I think it about persevering through and like
through agony,
yeah, through times when you're not having the most fun. Behoove me to not mention that you can become an amazing painter and have amazing pieces, and there are tons of examples of this, and never spend that much time on a single piece. And I think I go back to thinking about Trent Dennison and how great of a painter he is, and you can watch him paint like a big model in a fairly quick period of time. And it's because he spends so many hours painting one as best he can without futzing too much, and then he does it again, and then he does it again with a new model, and then a new model, and then a new model. And he's spending the same amount of time over the course of four as it would take me to do one, but he's pushing himself, and he's learning, and he's reevaluating with each one and applying that or some part of that to the next one. And so we're not saying if you want to be an amazing painter or you want to win awards with your painting, that it means you must spend 100 hours on a piece. But you must spend hundreds of hours on any number of pieces, whether it's one or 100, that is building off of each other. The problem with that most of us face, and I fall into this category 100%, is when I paint a model quicker or, you know, 30% ball sack, I'm not actually taking something I'm learning from that paint job to allow me to get better for the next time I paint one. And I have to be really active in thinking about, I'm not doing this slowly, but I'm still trying to achieve a result that I've learned from something from last time to get there quicker for this time.
Right. Your speed paint projects are using different approaches to painting that you might, and you might not use those approaches to painting in a display model. So when you go into the display world, then you kind of revert back to like painting in a hardcore way. And I will say that miniature painting does have a little bit of a reputation about painting things for competition, in that you need to labor over these things. You need to spend hours futzing with blends and stuff like that. That is definitely kind of like a thing in the miniature painting hobby.
That's how you earn your chops.
Yeah, definitely. Right?
You know,
yeah.
It's the unwritten rule of, did you spend enough time on this?
Right.
If you didn't, even if we can't tell that you didn't, that's, you know, you didn't earn your stripes.
Right.
Boy.
And I guess it's worth mentioning, obviously, this topic is, what do we do when we spend 100 hours on a model? It does not mean that you need to do it or it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Just kind of giving you a peek into what we're doing. Other things that take a long time. Just something to say.
No, I was just say that recently, probably in the last year, what I've just tried to do more of, because I haven't been painting, you know, full ball sack lately, is that I to make myself feel better about it or feel like I'm still improving, is every piece I do in some regard or another, I want to go through the same starting steps that I would if I was painting for competition. So for example, when we did the Twitch stream and I painted that Necromancer in 2 hours, I started with getting really bold highlights and colors and interest where I wanted it. And if I was painting that same piece for competition, I would be a little bit more purposeful about it, maybe a little bit more exact, maybe make it more fleshed out and more volumes in my highlights. But I would have still gone through that same process as my first step. It would be nice in an ideal world where my competition level is 25 steps, but me painting a Necromancer in 2 hours uses 5 of those 25 steps, but those 5 are done the same way as if I was doing 25.
Right. You're just skipping some in between steps.
Yep.
Okay. That sounds nice. That's definitely not how I paint. That sounds nice.
It sounds good in theory. And I came to this, you know, like I said, like a year ago, and it's like, well, if I can get these 5 steps that I'm always including in everything I paint, I'm going to get better at those 5 steps. And so if I'm using this similar or same 5 steps when I really want to try hard, well, suddenly 5 of my 25 steps are now way better than if I do a totally different process. And that's something that I always struggled with my competition stuff, is I felt like I spent too much time in the first three steps. I just took so long to just get down base colors, just build up basic tones to where I wanted, you know, the sketched out highlights and stuff. I was like, I've fought so much to get there, and it didn't do me a whole lot of good, because I ended up needing to later on build up the colors more vibrantly or add more, you know, different tones into them for depth of color later anyway. I should just go quicker at the beginning. And if I'm going to go quicker at that, that should be something I practice on all my models, is getting interest in the piece with color and layers of paint earlier on.
Yes.
You making a little volcano over there?
I am, dude. I'm reverting to my grade school self right now. Mm-hmm. Put some, what is it, baking soda and vinegar in there?
Put a Mentos and some Coke in that. Your poor green stuff sitting out on the table.
Where should green stuff sit?
I don't think it's supposed to be exposed to air.
Is that a problem?
And light. I mean, it's still fairly soft.
Light? It cures via with the UV?
No, I just think the oxygen.
Oh, I thought it was heat that cured it.
Oh, and that creates a chemical thing. Yeah. I know that you're like this, when it's exposed, like this line will get crusty, but you chop that out anyway.
Yeah. Other reasons why it might take long, and these are obvious ones, don't got to spend a ton of time talking about them, is that you might create a very intricate base for the model to go on.
Yeah.
You might scratch build a cool bridge or put some trees on there, or like spend a lot of time with like shrubbery. And you might even paint the static grass and things you put on there to tie together in a better way, which is a concept that is foreign to me. I have never done that ever in my life. I've never painted like static grass.
What I do, so, you know, we got those big sheets from Polak.
Yes.
That you can pull them off.
Yes.
I took my big sheet, and then I take really thin down ink through an airbrush, and I'll just airbrush certain sections of them, different colors, so they're all, they kind of have a, just a slightly different tone to them, but I don't go with actual paint. But that just gives you a little bit of variation in tone, just through some airbrush ink on the top. I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's pretty easy mode. You're absolutely right, though. And converting.
Yep, that's the other one. Yep.
Converting and base building. And it kind of goes without saying, like you said, you're giving full ball sack in every part. And that means every little rock and every little stick and every stone is exactly the amount of light it would catch in relation to its distance from the light source.
Yeah, maybe not that extreme, but you are thinking about them more than you would on any other given model.
Yeah.
Right? Another thing, subassemblies.
Oh, God.
Because you were talking about earlier, and I was going to mention it then, but then I forgot how you got to, you know, there's a part under your dude's armpit that you want to hit, right? And so because you are caring so much about every square millimeter of your model, you want those parts to be easily accessible. So they're easy to paint, because you don't want to like be like trying to thread the needle between someone's armpit to get a perfect blend. So having it in pieces helps that. But of course, that then makes it harder to put together later. It makes it harder to hold. You have to devise interesting tools to hold awkward parts so that are paintable. And then when you put them together, maybe there's gaps and you got to fill those gaps and you got to paint over the thing you use to fill those gaps. And yeah, I just, I hope at this point you can see that something can easily take 100 hours.
It just takes so much time.
Because there are so many things that you could labor over if you wanted to, if you had the patience to do it.
When I was doing my dragon, I did her wings separate from her body.
Yeah.
And I did the old Vaseline green stuff trick to form fit them.
Can you describe that? Cause that's kind of a cool trick.
Okay, so you take your subassemblies from this situation. It's a dragon wing and the dragon body, and there's a little slot where the wing goes and fits the body. I put Vaseline around the slot in the body and then around the edges of that as well. And then I put the wing in and I take green stuff or Milliput or whatever, and you basically sculpt it so it's completely seamless. And then that green stuff will adhere to the wing because that's the part that I'm having it stick to, and it'll be flush with the body. But because there's Vaseline, when I then pull it off, it will then create this perfect form that will be able to go back in there once it's cured.
Yeah.
I did that. And I must, well, I didn't do it exactly right, or little bits of it in the painting process of that green stuff chipped off.
Yeah, like little thin stuff.
They're so small. Yeah. And maybe I should have like scuffed up the bit of the wing first so I had better adherence, or put a little super glue or something, but I didn't. And so when I went back to the one of your final steps, when you're putting all the sub pieces together, and then by the way, once you do put everything together, now it's going to look freaking different, and you're going to probably have to redo some stuff because the lighting is off.
Maybe.
I find that I did that, or the consistency in a tone coming from a different shadow or whatever.
Yeah.
You got to redo it again. But in that situation, I had these big gaps where the wing met the body. I had to go through and milliput that whole section again over fully painted model, and then make sure it was 100% smooth and exactly how I wanted it, and then prime it, and then paint it. And now I've got a blue wing hitting a blue body, and I've got to make sure that you cannot tell that they were separate parts and separate pieces. And I got to redo all this blue again to make it, you know, basically get the puzzle pieces to connect and not look like this done. And that takes more time.
Yep.
So some assemblies can make your life easier in some aspects, but they can also cost you more time in the long run as well.
So true. That's why whenever people ask me about sub-assemblies, mostly they're beginners asking the question, because it's like a really fair question. It's like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, but holy hell, does it add time on the back end? It's just not worth it. It's not worth painting the rib cage of your Space Marine under the bolter when you have 60 TAC Marines to paint. Just put them all together and don't paint the underside. No one's going to care. And that saves you, in terms of painting an entire army, probably 50 hours. Like, I don't know. I'm just guessing. But a lot of time.
Yeah. And there's some, like I said, there's some value of, if at all possible, I like to work with as minimal sub-assemblies as possible. I'd say never, but I never paint unless it's for competition in sub-assemblies. Never paint in sub-assemblies. It's just, you're just making more time for yourself to get done with a model, be happy with how it looks like, having fun with the process, and you're adding more steps to yourself. And, you know, and you're always running that risk of when I put them together and a little bit of super glue spooges out, and now I got this bright, shiny super glue spot that I got to deal with too. And it's just, it's not worth it.
It's a risk, yeah.
But even for competition, I want to paint in as few sub-assemblies as possible, because then I get a true vision of what this model is going to look like and how all the different aspects are going to either compete with each other for focus, or do they still feel like they live in the same world? And just them simply being on separate things across your table can change an awful lot.
Yeah. And you're also then, there's no liability of like getting like thinned down milliput somewhere else on the model or getting, there's a lot of risk. All right. You got anything else, John?
I don't think so. That's just kind of our experience of what the heck do you do that takes so stinking long. And the TLDR version is futzing.
Lots of futzing.
You know, we're learning as we go. And I think any person you talk to, the best painters in the world, that they're always evaluating and learning about this specific model as they go as well.
Yeah, that's what I feel like. I feel like I'm never like in a comfort zone almost. Mm-mm.
And I think the sooner you get comfortable with being uncomfortable, the quicker you'll be able to just push forward. And that's true of so much part of this hobby.
So
much part is true, this hobby is. that we put up these barriers, we have these uncomfortable moments, and then we freeze, and then we ask the internet, and then we watch the videos, and then we look for the silver bullet, and we try to find, if I just had this answer to my uncomfortability, all of my problems would be solved. When in reality is, that just doesn't happen. It doesn't exist. We're all uncomfortable. We need to just let it fall off your back and just paint it anyway.
Yeah. That was a nice bow tie.
Just tie it up.
All right. On to some news.
I got some news.
Motherfucking soul blood. Dude. Everyone. So, okay. Soulblight reveals shown recently, most notably, fancy new kit of Blood Knights.
Oh, we got some BKs up in here. We got the BK broilers.
I got a lot of messages saying like, oh, are you sad that you converted two units? I was like, fuck no. Like now I'm going to paint a third unit and that one's going to look different too. And I'm having a sick ass army of all fucking different looking Blood Knights.
Yeah.
It's going to be so cool. I'm super excited for this kit. I do get, so we've kind of discussed it already in our little chats with Vince and Sam, and you were saying that you're like, yeah, it looks cool, it's not blowing me away, but it's cool. I totally get where you're coming from. I think the unit champion, the Castellan, that's probably the most striking character in the entire unit, as it should be, right?
Yeah.
There's a female in the unit.
There might be two.
I'm super happy about that because the original unit has none. And in my conversion, I was like, there are female vampires. I want to make some. Bang. GW followed suit. That's right.
They copied you.
Learn from me. No, they probably had it in the works way before I did that conversion. But yeah, I'm super hyped. I now have, someone sent me the old pewter ones. I have the old pewter ones. I have two units of my own converted, and I will have a new kit. I could have this whole spectrum of Blood Knight history. It's going to be amazing. I love it.
Need to make a video on that about the... Are new GW kits actually better than the old ones?
Oh, yeah. That's
wah, wah, wah!
Juicy clickbait right there.
Yeah, and you got the metal one and you got the new one. You'll have both of them and you'll be like talking about it and be like, fuck yeah, they're better. Okay.
Yeah.
End of video. Yeah, there was those. I mean, we're not going to go through all the reveals because I did a after reveal show with Vince Venturella, and you can check that on his YouTube channel if you want. Nice. My opinions, but they got new fell bats, dude. I freaking love those bats.
Yeah,
they're so freaking cool. And then surprise, okay, I thought after that reveal show and they showed a bunch of new stuff, new zombies, new skeletons.
Oh yes, not every skeleton has a tombstone on its back.
And not every zombie.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Yes, those look way better. They still got the roots coming from everywhere. Whatever. But that's an easy fix.
Yeah, I don't mind the roots.
I don't know. It's one of those I'm going to hold it in my hand and really just make my final call on it.
You know, you say a lot of old man things. I don't know if they're old man things, but let me just take you. You pronounce roots as roots.
Roots.
To me, that's like, my uncle says that. Okay. My old uncle. Another thing, you say supper and not dinner. Okay. That's an old person thing.
Yeah.
You know, there was a third thing too, and I can't remember right now, but you know, you got old man energy.
I get it from my old German family. As they talk like my dad talks like, my grandma talked like. Spent a lot of time with my grandma when I was a kid. She'd call it a washcloth, not a washcloth.
Washcloth. Okay.
Yeah, that's something about the motherland.
Jesus.
So I'm guilty as charged.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. It's just an observation.
Yeah, supper and dinner has just always been confusing to me because my supper is evening time, and then my dad calls lunch dinner. And whoa. So he's like, he's going to come over for dinner? And I'm like, what time? Like, I don't know what you mean.
You had to like react to that like, whoa.
Whoa. Am I coming over at noon or at six?
Are you tricking me right now, Dad, or you not?
Yeah, I had to do like the mental math. I'm like, okay, who is saying this to me? What do they usually say? What does that mean?
Yeah.
Interpret. So if I say supper, it's only because that is what I grew up on.
Well, that's fine. Yeah, you could say that. That's a word people use to describe dinner.
I'm glad that we went from supper and dinner from zombies.
Okay.
And roots.
Back on to zombies. What were you saying?
I was shocked that after that reveal, I thought that was going to be like the majority. They showed us the book cover and everything, that was going to be the reveals. And then whammo blammo, Monday, they give us a new like vampire aristocrat lady.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh gosh, there's more. And I think there's going to be even more.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're seeing new characters.
Mm-hmm.
You got that rat boy. You got chick with super tall hair.
Yeah,
I'm super down for new vampire characters.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm done with the Von Karstens. I'm done with whatever Neferata, and
I want that vampire lady to just be able to like mind control people.
Yeah.
How great would that be? Like, no, actually, you're going to turn around and fight your buddy today.
You know what I realized about that model? I'm not super into that model. It's cool. But what I really like about vampires in Warhammer lore are the armored ones.
Yeah.
Okay, so peak vampire for me in this whole wave of new vampires has been the Underworld's vampires. Those guys kick fucking ass. They're the coolest ones.
They really are.
Okay.
See, I'm more of a I'm more of the aristocrat, the high society, the genteel vampire.
Yes, I love that narrative. I love it. It's so cool.
But I also wanted to be kind of badass too.
Yeah. Right?
So that's why when I look at like the
this one.
Oh, hey, look at that. Yes, like the female leader of that Underworld's war band, where she has some armor on, but she just is like lithe and athletic.
Yes.
And sleek.
Yes.
And she just looks deadly as fuck.
Yeah, like a hybrid. Yes. Absolutely. I 100% agree.
That's where I want to be. One thing that jumped out at me for this, the new lady vampire that this showed, in addition to being on an oval base, which is fine, is how they actually showed restraint by not covering everything with crap.
Wow. You're right. I didn't notice that until you said it right now. Totally right.
Like her dress is just beautiful folds and realisticness and all of that. And even like her leggings and all that, or the bodice. There's not, it's not covered in fiddly bits. And so that's why I think probably a lot of people, their initial reaction was a bit of an underwhelming thing, because we're just used to crap on crap.
Yeah.
That's what we want from GW. But when you have this, you have a kind of a more blank canvas. And one of the people that got most hyped after seeing this, most people were lukewarm, was Sam Lenz. He loved that model. And because he likes to have space to work.
Yeah.
And space to bring his own take on things. Mm-hmm. And that model gives you that. So
it does.
I don't know if that's the reason why he liked it. I guess I didn't give a follow-up question to why. But my gut tells me that's one of the reasons, and I think that's cool. So there's still a chance. And now by the time this episode goes live, hopefully this has all come to fruition, is there's a direwolf on the front of the cover of the book. That's not been shown yet. I would love me some big, nasty direwolves.
And a sick-ass dragon.
And that dragon.
I mean, yeah, I think we're not going to see a new kit. And if we don't, I'm totally fine with that. I'm fine with the one we have right now.
Yeah. I don't think it's going... My guess is we are going to get that. It will not be a Vampire Lord and Zombie Dragon. It'll be the centerpiece model for the army.
So yeah, that's the thing. We need a big model, right? Yes.
Yep. We need our, you know, Teclis or giant cow mountain thing or Catacross or Marathi or whatever. Like if you go back recently, everybody's got their $150 big old model.
Yeah.
And they've released more kits for this army already than I had expected.
Yeah.
So if they're going to put this much investment in this army in terms of new stuff, I think there's no reason why they wouldn't do all that and not also do a new Aberash.
Do not play with my heart and invoke the name of Aberash, okay? We did get a Vargeist. That's a pretty big model. But yeah, you're talking about something big and ornate and special, usually a character. Yeah, I'm excited. If you give me Aberash on a dragon, I will never say bad things about you again, GW.
Other than Gagel.
All right, on to something about Model Builder by Moonlit Games coming to Steam. What is this? Trash.
Okay, exactly. I was
is it bad?
I was scrolling through Facebook, and I tried to find an actual link to this. It doesn't exist. Scrolling through Facebook, and a Facebook ad came up for a video game called Model Builder.
Okay.
And it said it's coming soon to Steam.
Okay.
It's literally a simulator of you with clippers on the screen clipping the bits out of the model kit, and then you with glue gluing the bits on the model kit, and then you with a fake like airbrushing the model kit. And I'm like, this can't be real.
Just do the real thing.
The whole satisfaction of this hobby is the connection to a real thing.
Okay.
I don't get it.
It's weird. Okay, devil's advocate. Doing it virtually is cheaper than doing it for real. All you gotta do is pay for the game. That's it, right?
Sure.
That's all I can think of.
It's just so weird. It's like the game is tailored for not actual hobbyists. Because actual hobbyists would be like, are you bloody kidding me?
Maybe it'll get people into the hobby of miniature painting.
I bet they sell like 7 copies of this garbage game. God, it just looked like trashware too. I mean, it didn't look like it was like really nice quality and like graphics or whatever. I mean,
well, take that, Moonlit Studios, you trash can developers.
Yeah, that's right. We said it.
We're
not scared.
All right, everyone likes a bit of goss. You like a bit of goss?
I do, and I was purposely, as soon as I saw you wrote this down, I was like, I need the skinny, but I'm going to wait so I get to hear it along with all the goody peepees for the first time. Okay. Tell me the snoop.
Okay. So like, this is probably not as big a deal as I'm making it to be. I'm not going to make it to be a big of a deal either. So CK Studios recently started to announced recently that they are going to start doing classes again. And Justin McCoy of Secret Weapon Miniatures, which is a pretty cool site where you can buy like resin bases and like crushed glass and like stuff for like terrain.
They got a lot of washes and paints and stuff too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they do. Like they can almost have like a whole paint range almost. Mm-hmm. Justin McCoy was not happy with that. And John's farting during my gossip and I don't like it. And he let people know that he wasn't happy about it. Now it's worth mentioning that I did not see the original unhappiness that Justin sent. What I did see was Caleb had a status saying, I appreciate all the kind words that people have given me about my decision to want to do classes again. Please do not be mean to Justin. I have no desire for that to happen. So what I am inferring here and reading through the lines is that somewhere, somehow, Justin made some kind of outcry and people react to it negatively in such a way that they were boycotting his business.
Oh.
Now, okay, Caleb can do whatever the heck he wants. He's an adult. People can choose to go to their classes if they want. They're all adults. They can make their own choices. Justin can have an opinion too, and that is totally fine. I don't care about any of that. But yeah, our world of miniature paint doesn't get a lot of gossip, so it's always fun to talk a little bit about it.
Oh man, the pitchforks came out.
They did. They came out. Yeah, and Jessica Rich, who is Justin McCoy's, I believe, partner, said, "Keep in mind, if you boycott Justin's business, you're also fucking with me." And I was like, "Yeah, that's a good thing to think about. Is that you are not only affecting the individual, but also the people the individual is related to."
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, "Okay, I don't really think it was that big of a deal, but." In terms of the miniature painting world, where art gossip is also miniature, it existed. It was there.
To me, it would be, I would need to read exactly what he said in response to Caleb saying they were going to start classes again.
You can read his comments on that status. Okay. He's just saying that, like, you don't need to do this. Like this it's not safe to have a class right
it's
now.
It's irresponsible.
It's irresponsible. Stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can say that and have your opinion known in still a classful way. And sometimes people will just see red regardless.
Yeah. And we're not saying that Justin didn't do it in the classy way. Because, again, I didn't see it. We have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, it's a tumultuous time. And, people, especially those that make a lot of their living out of, in-person classes, it's been very rough and forced to innovate and forced to try to tighten their belt and survive or find some other way.
Yeah.
And I know Caleb has.
Yep.
But it's still not good. It's not the same. And so, what is the right time? Where's the golden switch where you turn the switch on and then everybody's okay with it? Is that's unrealistic? Tough.
You got to start at some point.
Speaking of,
I didn't know if did you see the most recent announcement regarding Minnesota and COVID vaccinations?
No,
they are going to be available to the public.
The public?
Sometime in the next month, in the next week.
Yeah. I'm in the next wave being a diabetic and I'm on the short call list too. So I'm hoping by next time re-record, I will have my first vaccination.
Very cool.
And then you and my wife will soon be far behind, or maybe you'll probably get yours before me because everybody I know has gotten theirs except for me. So,
all right. Last bit of newsy news. I call the Moonlit Studios thing actual trash, but what I mean is this item is literal trash. What is this? What is this garbage? Red grass wet palette 2.0.
One of the great goody peepees sent me this and said, "Did you see this? This is good for the news." And I'm like, I'm putting it in the news. Coming in May 2021, Everlasting Wet Palette 2.0.
Everlasting.
You're going to be everlasting over this everlasting. New size. Improved sealing system. New hydration membrane.
Yes, I'm so glad that it still seals. That's a functionality that I want in a wet palette. I'm being sarcastic. That is stupid. Okay. Is there more to it?
Wait. They're claiming the thing they claimed the first time.
Oh.
The reusable hydration membranes for realsies this time.
Okay.
Lest waste more paint. I don't know how that works. Unless
dude,
there's
developed for years, is unparalleled. The patented design makes it easier to operate compared to our old design and ensures a tighter seal. Airtight and watertight. That's right. Because what I want when I put my wet palette lid on is to come back the next day to a bunch of unusable paint. Evaporation is important. Redgrass. Okay. Anyways, whatever. This palette is beloved by many. Mm-hmm. And the 2.0 version is coming out.
I backed the first one.
You fucking chump.
Under the... Whatever. You got a free one. You could... S my D. I backed the first one because when I backed it, their claim was that this reusable, what do they call it? Hydration membrane. Your fucking paper. Okay. It's your goddamn palette paper. They said they had the reusable stuff at that time. You could just like wring it out like a ShamWow and then just put it back on. That's why I backed it. And then after, like 6 months after it had been funded, but not yet, you know, come out to us, they're like, oh, we can't actually do that part. Sorry. Like,
yeah. That was a little weird.
But anyway, I think it's fine. Some people love it.
Yeah.
The wet palette.
I would say most people love it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, everyone I know is fine with it.
Yeah.
I'm the only person that's being a little bitch about it.
You really are a little bitch.
Yeah.
Yes. I have both the Masterson and that one. I just end up just using the Masterson. And it probably is just because I used the Masterson for like a year before that one came out. And I was just more comfortable with it. Like it acted the way I wanted it to act, and their paper just acts different.
Yeah.
Maybe not better, maybe not worse. It just acts different. And I wanted to go with what I'm comfortable with.
Yeah. Also, I had a list of like 17 reasons why this one's better than that one.
Oh, yeah.
What one thing I do notice, and I think I noticed it, if these are, I don't know if these are renders or if they're the actual product, is the basin or the base of the palette seems to be deeper, which means more water, which means less time having to fill it up. Which is great. That's one complaint I had. It was so thin and so big that it evaporated so fast, and I had to add water to it every 30 minutes, and it was so annoying.
If it was deep and that sponge like was like triple XL, like double stuff Oreo.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, the double stuff Oreo variant of sponge.
Yeah, you take a double stuff Oreo and you unscrew it, and you take another double stuff Oreo and you unscrew it, and then you take the two cream-filled sides and you put them together.
Yes.
I want to eat that sponge. It tastes like cream. So that's it for the newsy news. Those are all the things. If you come across newsy news and you want to make sure we know about it, you can drop us a line right in the something something contact us section.
news@trappedunderplastic.com is the email address. It is linked. It is written out in the show notes or the description.
And if you buy the Model Builder video game and you love it, please tell us so we can laugh at you. No, maybe it's amazing. Oh, God.
Welcome to the end of the podcast. Thank you all for joining us on this glorious every other Monday to hear us chickadee chat about anything. Anything.
And everything.
Including nightmares. You know, yeah. And painting.
Share your painting nightmares.
I wish I had paint. I mean, maybe I don't. Maybe it's good that I have no nightmares.
You live your painting nightmares by dropping your model.
Here's a would you rather question. Yeah, shit. Would you rather have dreams and have a nightmare one of every six times, or not dream or have any nightmares at all?
No dreams.
No dreams. Okay. Then I got it good then.
Yeah, you got it, dude.
Well, maybe you don't have a nightmare one-fifth every night, you know?
I don't.
That'd be fucking terrible.
Yeah, it would.
I wouldn't want to sleep.
No, I mean, that's the... Okay, here's my problem is why I love scary movies and I hate scary movies. I love scary movies, but scary movies give me the most vivid nightmares.
Oh, that's fucked. Yeah, that would suck.
And so it's this love-hate relationship that I have with them. It's like, I want to watch more and more of them, but then it's like in the nighttime, I'm just like, now that it's dark, John.
I mean, I got some horror movies to show you that I feel like you haven't seen, and I am excited to share with you. We got to do another little sleepover.
Yeah, we do.
We get our onesies out.
Yeah. I got my slippers. We need to get our new onesies.
Onesies, as if onesies isn't short enough. All right, if you like this podcast and our chit chat about pajama pants, there are many ways for you to support us and allow us to continue doing this. We have a Patreon campaign where the main reward is an extended episode of the podcast where we chit chat about favorite minis that we have seen from other painters in the community. We talk about new things that we've experimented with and the things we have learned in those experiments. We also give feedback to one of our patrons. So by being a patron, you have the ability to get live feedback in one of our episodes, and you also get to suggest topics for our episodes. It's a lot of fun. Also, another way to support us, John, can you give us your best Superman impersonation? You can buy merchandise of this. No, you're supposed to tear it apart.
Put the buttons back on.
Yeah, so you can buy a lovely sweater, t-shirt. They have two designs, the Tendi inspired one and the logo for our podcast. You can find it on Teespring, linked in the show notes and description if you're on YouTube. Other free ways, you can give us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can tell your nerd friends about our podcast because it's amazing and you know it.
You know it.
What the fuck are you doing?
Dude, just keep going.
And you can watch our podcast with ads enabled through various web browser add-ons that whitelist specific YouTube channels if you are that kind of person. We play an ad every 30 minutes.
God damn it, Scott. You ruined my tower.
Your wonderful Jenga paint tower.
My shilling. Okay, that's it.
That's it. This is the end.
This is the end. Ed!
Why'd you just scream? I thought you were going to say something, but you were just like,
I had a nightmare right there. This
is weird. You're just lucidly drinking. you just saw a green glowy eye in the corner.
Oh, man. All right. Until the next episode, we will catch you on the flippity flap.